And we welcome you back to another episode of Inside Boxing Live, your favorite boxing podcast in the entire world. It's Dan Canobio. It is former world champion Chris Algieri coming off of a huge weekend in the boxing world. Fights in Dublin, Ireland, fights in Las Vegas, fights all over the world, and we're going to break them all down. None bigger than David Benavidez's thrashing of Demetrius Andrade stops him inside of six rounds. Katie Taylor was victorious. There were a lot of other fights underneath those two main events that we'll get to. Chris, it was a big fight weekend. Kicking off fight season has completely kicked off. What'd you make of the entire weekend? And what'd you make of David Benavidez? And how are you, too? I can ask you that, too.
All right, number one, I'm fine. Two, how do you spell Sizzin? Is it S-Z-N, like DAZN? Like,
Sizzin. S-Z-N.
Sizzin.
That's how the kids are calling it.
That's cool. Okay. I like it. Yeah. Great weekend. I mean, it's a great night day of fights. It was an all day affair. I was very excited. I got my workout in the morning. I got the boxing gym, which I haven't been in a while. I'm just banging the bags around, getting ready.
I've been kicking lately.
So I've been slow playing the kicks for about a year and a half. I never really stopped. I wouldn't do it in between fights quite a bit because it's great cardio. And I like it. It also gets my little animal vibe out. So I get to be, you know,
I like to kick something every once in a while.
Ooh, if you want to,
I got a lot of pent up aggression from traffic, New York City traffic.
If you want to get some of the New York City out of your blood, go fucking slam your shins into something really hard.
I watch your videos. You're doing those low kicks. I'd counter over the top and I'd probably win.
Well, no, because you got to set up the counter. You got to set up the leg kicks. And that's why a lot of these guys, Conor McGregor included, breaks his fucking leg because he doesn't set them up. You can't just wing kicks, man. You got to set those things up.
But those are you're just doing that for recreational purposes, right? You're not trying to get back into any type of
active. No, not at all. Especially kickboxing.
You're too much of a. There's no money in that.
No, and also there's too many injuries. I mean, I left this work because of injuries. I love kickboxing, always did. Never wanted to leave because of lack of love for this sport. There's just no money in it. So
right. I enjoyed. We did a few CompuBox. We did some Glory kickboxing. Very, very hard to track because they were
awesome fight
kicks. They were awesome. I know. And then awesome our guy Grisham still working and over there in Germany, and it's huge over there. It's pretty damn cool to watch. Anyway,
I would love to work with them. I mean, it's a great sport. So much fun to watch.
So you got to get on that, bro. That's another job you need to add to the. Do you even have time to call Glory kickboxing?
Man, I find time. That's my superpower.
Yeah, it's fight season, baby. Let's start with David Benavidez. Good gracious, this guy knifed through Demetrius Andrade like he was butter. He made Demetrius Andrade look ordinary. This is a two-division world champion. We did bring up on the last show a lot of the question marks around Demetrius Andrade. You know, he did win those titles that were vacant. He's 35 years old. He's never fought a championship caliber opponent. But you can see with your eyes, the dude has skills, and he flashed it early in that fight. And Benavidez just walked right through him. Offense looked outstanding. Defense is slowly getting better to getting to the elite level. This guy, man, is really coming into his own. 25, 26 years old. Got the respect of the boxing world. Got the respect of everyone. Does he have the respect of Canelo? Take us through it, Chris. What did you think of that performance?
Well, I'm going to disagree. I don't think he made Boo-Boo look ordinary, because Boo Boo actually did a lot of good things. And you know, he came out strong the first three rounds, and then the fourth he got dropped obviously and hurt, and then 5-6 it was a meltdown from there. But you know, Boo Boo did a lot of really nice things, and he was changing levels really well. Look down, shoot up, right. Look up, shoot down. Great body work early on, you know, was flashing some jabs and some movement, some lateral movement. But once he got hurt, once he got clipped that looping right shot in the fourth round, it was over.
That was over. Triple G, like that's another punch that Benavidez, maybe it wasn't that one. I just was looking at Twitter. Like, he's now throwing this over the top. Remember Triple G would throw that over the top?
He'd throw a left hook and he'd throw it up and over the top. Actually, Marcus Maidana used to do that. He did that when we were sparring. Everyone in the gym warned me about him. They're like, don't stop on the ropes. He's going to hit you on top of the head. And I was like, hit me on top of the head. I'm like, good. He's going to hurt his hand. And they're like, no. Don't let him hit you. I was like, okay. He never did. But yeah, he throws that thing over the top. Only guys with like super hard hands.
Well, Benavidez did that too. That's like a new wrinkle. Yeah. Like, so what I mean, he's learning new things.
No, he's improving quite a bit.
It's scary, man. It's scary. The guy is really rounding into form. I think his defense is super elite. He blocked so many punches with his gloves. it's why he's able to keep momentum and build up to that crescendo that you talked about last week, is because his defense is really good. It starts with defense. Yes. You know, never think that about David Benavidez. And it's something that when I interviewed him a few years ago, you know, he knew me as the CompuBox guy. And then he's asking me about what are my defensive numbers? And I'm like, yo, your defensive numbers are getting better. This was like 2-3 years ago, like every fight. To the point now where he's like top five in terms of opponent connect percentage.
Yeah, but Dan, he's doing it against better opposition. I know. That's the crazy part. Right. As you go up, KO percentage goes down, you know, your defense goes down, you're fighting better guys. This is not the case with David. That's why I'm so high on him. And I really do believe that he is going to be the next guy. I think he is going to relinquish the crown. Whether he fights Canelo or not, I think he's the next guy. I think, and another thing about him, we had him on our show on Pro Box. He is a super humble, well-spoken, very respectful young man. And I just think he has so many of those character assets that could make him a true star in this sport. Not to mention, he is so fun to watch. I mean, to do what he did with a guy like Boo Boo puts on fights that a lot of people often will say, like, that fight was, you know, it started out good and then it got like, ugh. That fight was gangbusters from the beginning. Boo Boo came out, started fast as usual.
Some flashy combos.
Really nice combinations. Letting his hands go, body, head, changing levels up and down. And just Benavidez was just so prepared. So prepared.
There's like a lot of poise now.
Yes, poise. Like you said, his defense is fantastic, which is very impressive. But also his punch selection, his precision. And I know he's known already from CompuBox as being one of the most precise punchers in the game today. But I was watching with a couple buddies of mine. And some of the big shots are showing this, they're showing the replays. And I'm like, Boo Boo didn't do anything wrong there. You know, hands are in the right position. You know, if you watch those replays, hands are in the right position and the punch just finds the way. Boom, finds the way. And that's what elite fighters do in the highest level against guys that are that good at that speed. I'm super, super impressed, more so than ever. I'm higher on Benavidez than I ever have been. You know, he beat my guy. Boo Boo's my guy. There's no secret about that. And he's a very difficult guy to look good against, let alone to dominate and destroy and get out of there.
Right. I didn't mean anything disrespectful, but he made him look ordinary. But he made it look a lot easier than I thought. I thought this was going to be a closer fight. I picked 10 through 12. I thought late stoppage. And I thought even a decision, you know, a hard-fought decision, tricky style. Benavidez would be start slow, eventually pick it up. That's one of the main takeaways I took away from Benavidez' performance. Was he got into his rhythm and he found his timing third round. He is now getting quicker, quicker. There's not a lot of the criticisms of David Benavidez's game right now. But the one thing that you can look at and poke a little hole in is that he's a slow starter. And if you're fighting a quick starter, not that Demetrius kind of is, but if you're fighting someone that starts fast, then maybe you could steal a few rounds. Well, but now
Demetrius is a quick starter. I just think he's a dangerous opening few rounds. Very dangerous.
He's had his drop. He's dropped guys in early in fights, and then he's coasted.
Almost every fight.
Less about Andre, but just more about Benavidez is that he is known as a little bit of a slow starter. But that's just one knock on his offensive game that you could talk about. Not really anymore, because I thought in the third round is when you could like physically see it. Like you could see the tide changing of the fight when he started the final rhythm. He's finding it in the third round. So this guy can come out like throwing 70 punches around or wait until the second or third round, makes him even more dangerous. I mean, just A-plus performance from the guy. And you're right, Chris. He has this poise about him. He carries himself like a superstar. I loved what he said after the fight. He's not like begging for a Canelo fight. He has done the right thing this year. What did he do? He fought Caleb Plant. And now he's fighting Demetrius Andrade back-to-back. He put his past behind him in terms of weight issues, in terms of outside of the ring, drug problems. That's all gone. Like that was a whole another life ago, and he's only 25, so he's learned from that. I couldn't agree with you more that he is like at the precipice of like superstardom. And that brings us to the next topic is it going to be Canelo? Every fighter needs that one guy to put him over the top. He asked for the fight after. He talked about it after. I didn't see anything Saturday night that made me want to see that fight any less or any more. I've always wanted to see Canelo versus Benavidez, but it's just so clear and so evident that is the next fight in boxing, and that's the next fight for Canelo.
We've been talking about that fight for years, and we've been talking about. Listen, I've been saying it for a while now. I think Canelo should have fought him already. I think the longer he waits, the better Benavidez gets, and we're seeing that. I mean, I think the things he learned in the Caleb Plant fight. he carried into the fight against Demetrius, and he looks that much better. And he's going to be better next time out. He's becoming an extremely dangerous, dangerous man. Not that he wasn't before. Does it happen next? No, because I'm hearing about the Munguia fight, and there's no chance that fight doesn't happen. If they're talking about Munguia on Cinco de Mayo weekend, that fight's happening. If there's any kind of thought process that fight could or not, it's going to happen. I mean, that is a commercial success no matter what. And honestly, I'm not mad about it. It's a fun fight. I would be happy leading up to that fight. I think the fight will be fun. I think Canelo is over the hill enough that actually might be competitive at spots. I think Canelo still smashes him, but like, I think it's a fun fight. But if he takes the Munguia fight in May, and does not fight Boo Boo in September.
Or Benavidez.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry. Benavidez. I got Boo Boo on my mind. my guy.
Start it over for the sake of the Instagram clip we're going to put out about this.
If Canelo fights Munguia in May, right, and then does not fight Benavidez in September, we got a big problem. A big issue. We are going to be pushing. Guys like us, guys like you and me, aside from the fans, we are going to be pushing. Guys, that all of the commentators in the sport are going to be pushing for Benavidez and Canelo. It's not going to happen next. I'm telling you guys right now. I'm sorry. It's not going to happen
next. I actually agree with you.
It's going to be Munguia next.
I actually agree with you. I think it makes sense.
If Canelo goes and fights Benavidez, I'm happy. I'm cool.
Right. It's. I think if Canelo fights Munguia next and he doesn't fight Benavidez in September, then we have a major problem. Major problem. The pressure is already mounting. He's backed into a corner. I understand it's Canelo Alvarez. He can do whatever he wants. He can retire tomorrow as a Hall of Famer. He can fight Munguia. He can fight Jermall Charlo. He can fight whoever he wants. I understand that. Get paid $50 million and still looked at as an all-time great. But he's still looking at his legacy, and he's still looking to cement it at 168. And he does have a massive ego, Canelo, and he does have a lot of pride. And he's backed into a corner right now to fight David Benavidez. Dame Lillard, NBA superstar, tweeting about it. Everyone asking me, when is Canelo going to fight Benavidez? It's the fight. Like, there's nowhere else for Canelo to go. Like, yeah, Munguia, that's fine. They can find the Munguias of the world. But you got to eventually fight Benavidez. It would be such a great fight. He's been his mandatory for going on 2 or 3 years now. Not only that, it's just the proper fight to make business-wise. Both are with PBC. Wherever it is next year, whatever network they're on, whatever, like it's going to be a spot for them to fight. But you're right, if it's Munguia, so be it. As long as there's some type of agreement, as long as there's some type of handshake or something that indicates that they will fight in September. And I always thought that Canelo would take that fight on the last fight of the PBC deal. That makes more sense on the last fight, where after that he can retire or he can re-up, he could do a rematch. It didn't make much sense for him to fight him in May. If he fights Munguia, he's going to face a lot of blowback, Chris. You know that. But I don't think Canelo cares. And it's not the first time that Canelo's fighting someone that we don't really want him to fight when there's a bigger fight out there. But, you know, Benavidez is only getting better. He's 25 years old. It's not a Triple G scenario where he waited till Triple G was 35. Like, Benavidez is in his prime or just approaching his physical prime, not to mention all the mental stuff too. But Canelo's got to fight him, man. It's so interesting. I'm very interested to see what Canelo will do next.
Dude, I don't not like the Munguia fight. I actually like it. I think it's gonna be a fun fight. It's gonna be an awesome buildup. Awesome buildup. I think it's a really fun fight. And listen, if Canelo, and I'm not saying he's ending his career, but if he ends his career or at least ends this deal and he fights Munguia and then Benavidez, two young, hungry, undefeated guys, that is fucking badass. And that is what Canelo does, and that is what great Mexican legends do. I'm thinking back to Julio Cesar Chavez when he fights De La Hoya. And it was a passing of the guard, right? He went out on his shield. He got completely outclassed and beat up. And stopped. I'm not saying that's going to happen here. I don't think he's as far gone as Chavez was when he fought De La Hoya. I don't think they're that far away in terms of competitiveness. But it's just one of those things. You know, like, hey, listen, De La Hoya got smashed by Pacquiao on the way out. You know, he fought Mayweather. He fought him really well. But he fought Pacquiao in his last fight and got destroyed. So Mexican warriors go out on their shield. So does Canelo take that page out of the book? Does he relinquish the crown? Does he pass on the torch on his back the way that other great Mexicans before him has? Or does he avoid all that? Does he avoid the tough fights? Does he avoid the toughest fight, which is the Benavidez? Like we both alluded to, he is the next guy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, why not fight him? Win, lose, or draw, I don't think it affects Canelo's legacy. If he loses, it goes... Listen, Chavez losing to De La Hoya affects his legacy. Does it make him any less of a great? No. Does De La Hoya losing to Pacquiao, coming back down in weight, lose? No. So does Canelo losing to Benavidez really take away from all the great things that he's done? I don't think so, no. But there's a chance he can still beat him.
Yeah, I think they're
close
so
enough. I think they're close enough competitively that he really could beat him.
It's a very close fight.
Forget it.
Right.
Forget it.
It's a very close fight. Like, it's a very competitive fight. And Canelo has fought everyone. Like, he has fought everyone, whether it's at the time that you wanted that fight to take place or not, whether you say that he waits opponents out, whether it was an older Cotto, older Golovkin, or it was any
of the... He fought Floyd at 23. Come on. These people are like waiting these guys out. Like, yeah, waited out at Triple G in the rematch. But come on, dude. Like, he's been pushing, and he took losses early. He was okay with that.
Right.
Like, I don't know.
I thought Canelo looked great and re-energized in that last fight against Charlo. And I thought, obviously, Benavidez is trending upwards. So I'll ask you right now. This version of Benavidez, this well-polished monster in there versus the re-energized, healthy Canelo, who are you picking in that fight?
It's hard to say because they're both trending in different directions, right? Canelo looked good his last fight, and he hadn't looked good in almost 18 months and a bunch of fights in a row. But it doesn't matter. He's still on the back end. You know, he's on the back end of his height, his best. At his best, he could definitely beat Benavidez. And even maybe a 90% Canelo could beat Benavidez. Are we looking at, is he 89% or is he 91%? Because it's that level of competition between these guys. And then Benavidez, we don't know because he's getting better at a fight. This guy who fought Andrade is the best version we've ever seen.
Yeah.
Guess what? Caleb Plant was the best version we'd ever seen up until that point. That's how this guy is progressing. So when he finally steps into the ring with Canelo, what level of Benavidez are we going to see? What level of Canelo are we going to see? Either way, I think it's competitive. A lot of the things stylistically Benavidez does would trouble Canelo, just going off of empirical evidence in the past, you know, what's giving Canelo trouble. And if the fight ever gets announced and we're going to do a more technical analysis, we can get really, really into that stuff, get into the weeds. But I don't know, man. Right now, it's a pick'em fight, as far as I'm concerned.
It's going to be a pick'em fight in the public eye because they'll be like, oh, Canelo's getting older. He's trending downwards. Benavidez is trending upwards. There's a lot of Canelo haters out there. There's a lot of Benavidez as the new fresh and shiny toy. It will be a close to a pick'em fight when it gets announced. Inside of the ring, like, I have a hard time going against Canelo, especially what I saw against Charlo. Healthy, looks like he's re-energized, looks like he's motivated. Explosive. Like, yeah, he was throwing some hard shots in there. It's not going to be like a one-sided fight either way. I think it's going to be a very competitive fight. I think it's going to stop the boxing world, can stop the sports world. That's a big one. That's like the biggest one you can make. It's starting to look like that more and more as a lot of fights get knocked off. Spence Crawford gets knocked off. Tank Ryan gets knocked off. Heavyweight Fury and Usyk will have fought by the time that Canelo and Benavidez get in there. It's like pretty much the only one remaining that we haven't seen or been talking about for the last 3 to 4 years.
Better be of and Bivol.
Well, yeah, I don't know. Do you still? I kind of, that's left my mind. Even though they did have that encounter,
I still love that fight. Man.
It's a great. It's a fight that probably will happen now because of Saudi Arabia, and Saudi has enough money to cut through any divide in boxing. They just invested in the boxing video game to get it across the line. Now they're having a problem with funding. Saudi Arabia is the rider season.
They could probably get me to come back. I mean, if they're throwing
anyone,
money around,
bro. Anyone. And they can solve any problem in boxing right now with just raining down Benjamins or their equivalent to Benjamins. So Canelo Benavidez will be the story for the next couple of months. Interested to see what Canelo does in that one. Shout out to Demetrius Andrade, too, going out on a shield, fought tough to the end. I don't want to hear any people shading him, criticizing him, saying this guy, I saw it on Twitter today. He's a bum. He's always been a bum. But dude, stop. He went out there, got his fight at age 35, gave it all he had. I still want to see him fight some of the guys at 168. He just ran into a buzzsaw. Didn't like that he rehydrated to 190 pounds. Did you see that, Chris?
Who did?
Andrade.
What?
According to Victor Conti, tweeted it out. He tweeted it like it was some type of accomplishment. I mean, he looked big in there. I don't know if he looked 190. I thought maybe he, after the third round, he looked slow and maybe he gassed out. I'm pretty sure I saw it from Conte himself.
I mean, he looked good. He looked good physically in terms of for a 68 pounder. I was impressed with that. He looked lean. I don't think getting to 190 is probably a good idea. But also, I don't know. I don't know how much I trust Victor Conte saying things like that or tweeting. So
Victor Conte, I watched his Balco doc on Netflix, and I'm like, of course, this guy ends up resurfaces in boxing. Of course.
Well, boxing is wild, wild west, and there's you know.
Yeah, he looked at it as like some type of hero there. I can't find the tweet. I saw it. Doesn't mean it's true.
Exactly. What this is boxing. I mean,
it's, he did look big. He did look big, but I like to see.
He didn't look bigger than Benavidez. I mean, he looked good. He looked like a 68 pounder.
He was moving good in there until he got rocked, and that's gonna happen. This happened to everyone Benavidez has fought. Undercard. Jermall Charlo back 888 days after his last fight. He fights Jose Benavidez, brother of. Mm-hmm. David, I thought Jermall looked pretty good, man. I thought, all things considered, he blows past the catch weight on Friday. That was abysmal and so unprofessional, whatever. It's in the past. And then he gets in the ring, and I thought his timing was pretty good. I thought his jab was really good. I thought his right hand was right on cue. I thought, all things considered, yes, he was facing a blown-up 147-pounder, 154-pounder, Benavidez, who's kind of shot, very tough, but shot. All things considered, I thought Jermall Charlo looked pretty good. I thought his timing and his rhythm, I thought it was there. Considering being out for 800 plus days, I thought that was like a B-plus performance from Jermall Charlo, and he says he wants to fight a bunch of times next year.
Well, the story of that particular fight was Jose Benavidez having big balls. Like he fought his ass off. He's always been technically sound, always been really tough, always had the right mentality, completely outgunned. And he made it difficult for Jermall. If Jermall was on the precipice of having a psychotic break, right, which I was not ruling out at all going into that fight,
or during
Jermall
it,
that's what I mean. Jermall would have, because he put enough pressure on him. He made it difficult enough. But Jermall is just a different level of athlete. Obviously, the size is a big part of it, and I agree. He didn't look sharp, Jermall, but he didn't look bad for a guy out for 30 months. He did not look bad at all.
His jab looked better than I thought, but he's also had a tailor-made opponent.
Correct. A tailor-made, super small opponent. A guy who was going to be in there, who had a good name, who was going to be physically tough, who was going to be right in front of him, who was going to bang on his belt line and tell you to come on, let's go. And when you got a guy who's that much bigger than you, and you know he rocked him several times, did Jermall with the right hand. His jab was the most impressive aspect of the fight. It was very, very sharp. He wasn't sharp, but the jab was, and he had a good jab. He flashed it. The right hand looked hard. He looked a few times like he could have crumbled, but he pulled himself out of it.
He did get tagged a bunch, but I'm sure like that's a good thing. I mean, it's not good to get hit.
Nothing before or after the fight was a good thing. Everything he said prior to the fight, everything he said after the fight, the post-fight interview was awkward.
Very awkward.
I don't think his head's in the right place.
He's not fully back in terms of mental. No. I think you can just see that with two eyes. I'm not a psychiatrist, but you know, a lot of people have been wondering about him and coming in.
I feel for the man because I can see he's going through something.
Yeah, he's fighting demons, and we're all hard on him, and coming in 4 pounds overweight, I feel it was almost like a cry for help. I don't know what that was about. I think he should just leave 160 behind him. There's no big fights
He's not fighting. Well, his brother's going to take 160. I don't think Jermall's ever going to see 54 again. I think he's going to end up at 60, which would be smart. And then Jermall can go up to 68. The biggest money fight for him right now is Caleb Plant. That's the fight. Or if he could edge into the Canelo fight. If Canelo wanted to really be a ducker, if he wanted to duck Benavidez, he could take the Jermall Charlo fight which would be horrible for the sport. It would only be good for Jermall, but that fight could happen.
That would be not great. Charlo, what was I going to say? With Charlo, would you say he go right into the Plant fight next? Because obviously the bad blood is there. It's a very easy fight to make. Or do you see anything in the Benavidez fight that would lead you to believe maybe he should take another similar fight like that before getting Plant?
So I saw in the Benavidez fight that he should definitely take Plant next. Because if he fights a real 68 pounder, the chance of implosion and not making that payday is there. Go fight Plant.
Easy fight. Fun fight. Winnable fight.
If you're going to lose to the guy who's going to pay the most. There's too big of a risk of him losing to anyone at 68 on the way to Caleb Plant. Go right to Plant.
Right. I agree. Couldn't agree more. He wants to fight three times in 2024. The Plant fights the biggest one. Then see where the chips fall. See where the chips fall. Beat Plant, and then you're right in the mix for Canelo or any Benavidez or
a plus 32-year-old fighter fighting three or four times in a year at the highest level never happens. Won't happen.
Yeah. I mean, the fighters say a lot of things after fights when they're all, you know, full of adrenaline emotion, especially the guy that had.
Well, he had no emotion. He was literally just like, he looks like he is completely cut off from reality. So I don't know what kind of emotion he actually had. But
even during the week in the lead up, like some of the photos that I saw, like him, his just eyes look glazed. I mean, at the press conference, it's just odd. That's why I thought it was even that somewhat of an impressive performance, considering all that.
The guy can fight.
Right? I feel like maybe he felt the most at home, and he's felt in the last 800-plus days was in that ring, which is the strangest thing, but not really for fighters. That's what they do, and a lot of muscle memory, and I don't know. I feel for the guy. It's easy to crap all over him. I mean, the 4 pounds was the last straw for me. I was like, oh, God, I can't defend this guy anymore. And then, you know, you see him, and you end up rooting for him. It's just human nature. The Plant fight would be awesome. The buildup would be great. It's easy fight to make first quarter of 2024. Subriel Matias, good gracious, scariest guy in boxing, boogeyman. Boogeyman in terms of just destruction, boogeyman in terms of doesn't make any sense to fight him. He has a belt. He doesn't bring in a lot of revenue. He is the definition of the boogeyman of boxing right now. Subriel Matias just destroys Ergashev and scared me. I was legit scared watching him fight.
Dude, first round, he was completely outclassed.
Right? It doesn't even matter.
Completely outclassed. And then the second round, he just gets a little bit closer. A little bit closer. If you really watch that fight, Ergashev, listen, and I was talking to Polymon Aji and Teddy Atlas this week. We did some shows. We were talking about this. They both picked Ergashev to win, which I understand. Because if you look at X's and O's and
someone
really know
what you're
looking
at. They wanted to say that, Chris, good job picking Matias. Someone on Twitter. Because they saw that you picked Matias and the other guys picked Ergashev.
Yeah. Well, no, listen, if you know boxing at all, if you know the X's and O's of the sport and you watch the two of them, you're like, oh my God, Ergashev beats this guy every single day and knocks him out. But it comes down to balls and heart. It's not just about technique. And Matias has both. He is a stone faced killer. He just comes forward. He doesn't care if he lost the round before. He doesn't care if he lost the last six rounds before. He does not deterred at all. He's coming forward and he's hitting you with both hands. He hits hard with both hands. He's got a good engine. He's not durable. Doesn't take punches very well, although he did last night. But he gets hit super clean. Don't like any of that. But dude is tough.
He just grinds you down. He grinds you down to
he's a meat grinder. He's a meat grinder.
He'll grind you down to you're no longer there. And then he'll just take you out. It's the fourth consecutive fight where his opponent has quit on the stool, which is one of the scarier stats out there. But what's something that you can kind of throw it at the hype train? That is Subriel Matias, because obviously we're going to sing his praises and call him the boogeyman. If you were to say, all right, there's a style out there that can beat him, or there's someone out there at 140 that can beat him, or there's something about him that doesn't really scream out like this guy's so indestructible. What is it?
Well, the fact that he's not indestructible, the fact that he gets hit so much and he's been hurt, he's been knocked down. I mean, he's been hurt multiple times. Almost every fight that he's been in other than the last night, he's been rocked. He gets hit with big shots. He just gets hit too clean for my liking. So I am not super high on him in terms of being like, oh, he's beating everybody in the division, like everyone's saying. Listen, a guy like Devin Haney outboxes him. A guy like Teofimo Lopez, who's not going to let you hit him, but is also has firepower, very dangerous guy. And Progray, I think he's actually gotten past Progray in my ranking. I think Progray is old enough that maybe he is declined just enough that a guy like Matias, who has that eager young engine, would be able to get him. But I think a young Progray destroys him.
Progray is the only guy that's actually saying his name. Like Progray tweeted, like, I'm watching his fight. He's a beast. They asked Devin Haney about him, and Haney was very truthful. I don't knock it. He said, listen, I know who he is. I haven't really watched a lot of his fights. I know he has a 100% knockout ratio, but I'm looking for the biggest fights possible. He doesn't present a big fight.
He's not on that level yet. And that was one of the big things about, you know, what I was saying about in terms of because I was talking about my rankings, and I had him outside of my top three. I had him number four. But the fact that he hasn't been in with the big name guys yet. Listen, Ergashev's not a big name guy either. He just had a really good record, very glossy, but never fought anybody, which is why I picked Matias. I was like, he's been in with better guys. Even though he hasn't been in with the best guys in the world, he's been in with better guys than this guy has. So yeah, he had a very glossy record, big high knockout percentage. But listen, if you saw in that fight, like he landed as clean as punch as possible. And we've seen Matias hurt, Ergashev couldn't hurt him. So the Ergashev power was not real. It wasn't like the record said. But regardless, Matias had a very impressive performance. He's a meat grinder and he's super fun to watch. And I want to see him in with all those guys.
Will he get
realistically, politically, can he get those fights? Tough. It's good that he has a title. Very good that he has a title. But, you know, you got to think Haney and Prograde, the two top guys, they're out of the picture for at least 8 months, right?
Right.
6, 7, 8 months. Tio, we never know where he's at.
Yeah, did you see his said last night?
I don't even know how many things. I've seen a lot of things he said.
Someone called him and was like, hey, what's going on with the Ryan Garcia fight? I turned down the offer. Why? Because when you're bringing in endorsements like I am, you're bringing in these huge deals. And when you're the man, this is Teofimo, and they offer you $1.5 million, F you. I'm not taking that. And
I'm going to Italy.
I'm going to Africa. I'm taking this worldwide, baby. Prestige worldwide. Teofimo worldwide. It just sums up Teofimo.
I'm on a boat.
That is Teofimo. He has all the talent in the world. I think he's the guy at 140, but he has this such a convoluted and misjudged sense of his worth and value. He's not really a ticket seller. He's never fought on pay-per-view. Ryan Garcia, not half the fighter of Teofimo is, but has a $1 million pay-per-view under his on his resume. And a $30 million this and a $20 million gate. So he does have something. 1.5 is very low. I agree. Like, Teofimo is definitely worth more than that. But, you know, that's a big fight. Teofimo Ryan Garcia is a big fight. I think that it could clear 500,000 pay-per-views. I think it could clear 10 million gate. So there's a lot of money in the pot. So they can up that offer to Teofimo. But I just thought it was the most Teofimo answer I've ever heard. It was amazing. But listen.
1.5 million to fight a guy that you're going to fucking smash. And you're talking about you bring all these big name sponsors. Get paid on that. You're talking about a guy who Ryan is going to push pay-per-view sales.
Ryan's regardless. a bigger star than Teofimo.
Correct. But you're getting money in the back end. Work out the deal so your back end money's huge, right? Yeah. 1.5 million is your upfront. Cool. Not a lot of money. You deserve way more. Cool. Work out the background deal. Back end deal. All right, now I bring these big name sponsors. I bring Bud Light to you. I bring
Nesquik.
I get a percentage of what I bring to you. I'm bringing you Bud Light. I'm bringing you whatever company. You get numbers on. I bring you Disney. I'm bringing you these massive companies. Cool. I get a percentage of anything I bring to you.
Yeah.
So there's ways to make money other than that upfront. I understand it's a slap in the face, but listen, man, this is boxing. These guys are gonna pay you as little as you take, but there's ways around it. I made a lot of money outside the ring. For fights that people are like, oh, Chris getting underpaid. Okay, I made a lot of money otherwise. There's ways
to the back end.
Yes. There's ways to make money in this sport.
I agree. I just think it's the first negotiation.
But you got to fight.
Right.
You got to fight.
I think it that's the fight that will elevate Teofimo to like really superstardom. Then you can fight a Haney after that. Like Ryan Garcia, like use him. Use that name. Like Ryan Garcia has a name right now, man.
Listen, we love Ryan on the show. Do you see him beating Teofimo?
No.
No. Of course not. You know, again, no offense, Ryan. We love you. We love you, bro. But like this Teofimo is just a different thing, especially at 140. So I don't know, man. I got Tio is my guy at 140. So I think he's going to be hard to beat for anybody. But Tio is at his best when he's busy. When he's not busy, he has trouble. The Kambosos fight showed that. He came back with a career worst performance off of a long layoff. Taylor, career best performance. He was very busy that year.
Mm-hmm.
So it worries me that he is being at least alluding to the fact that he's going to be inactive.
He hasn't fought since June, and now you know he's turned down fights. Nothing on the horizon. He was supposed to usually fights in that Heisman one. He's not fighting the Heisman in December. You know, this Ryan Garcia fight, from everything I heard, was being scheduled or looked at for February, late February, early March. Who knows? Who maybe he gets the money that he wants, and then he takes over the world. And Teofimo is back on top. But I just thought it was a funny thing at 140 this past weekend. Over in Dublin, Ireland, this fight had a lot, man. This fight had a lot. Katie Taylor, Chantel Cameron. Katie Taylor wins. underdog for the first time in her life. She avenges the first loss in her career. Atmosphere was electric in Dublin, especially when the hand gets raised of Katie Taylor. A lot of things happened in this fight that I didn't particularly like, but I'll get to those in a little bit. Talk about Katie Taylor. She fought a really smart fight. She did hold a lot, but she 2-minute rounds. So she was throwing her fleshy combinations. Crowd goes nuts. And then she holds. And then she got out of the way of Chantel Cameron's jab. Cameron threw half the amount of jabs she threw in the first fight. I don't know what she was doing in there. But Katie Taylor is now a 2-division undisputed champion at age 37. She goes, she's an all-time great. Great performance, all things considered, from Taylor.
Yeah, I mean, Clarissa is the GOAT, but Katie Taylor's right there, too. I mean,
Shields is a self-proclaimed GOAT.
Yeah, I mean, but, like, she's arguably the GOAT as well. And but I think
the Olympics and stuff, yeah.
Right. I think these two women are going to be in the discussion for the greatest woman female, first greatest female fighter of all time, either one of them. I mean, now we have a 2-division undisputed world champion in some of the toughest, in the toughest weight classes that we have for the females. She's also an Olympian, Olympic gold medalist, had a long career. She lost to a very capable champion after moving up. And instead of chasing the money, she chased glory and went right back into the fray. And fought a very tough defending champion who's going to get better off of that first fight. And she outfoxed her. She fought smarter. She fought better. Chantel Cameron, I don't know what the hell she was doing out there. It was, she let that fight go. She came out beautifully in round number one. She looked so goddamn good in round number one. I was like, wow, yeah. She can really fight. And then round two, she regressed 10 years. I don't know.
She
I don't
did
know what
drop
that...
her in round two. Ref didn't see it.
No, that was round one.
Was that the first or second round to drop?
I think that was still the first round.
Whatever. Early on, she got dropped.
I think it was the first round. Right. First round, she looked amazing. Like, the jab was so hard and stiff, and she was just walking her down. Right hand, jab, jab, 3-2. Left hook, right hand, bomb, bomb. Like, everything looked strong. It looked like Katie was in a bad, bad place. She wasn't taking the punches well. She seemed like she got rocked a few times. Yeah. She got shuddered. And then Katie just, man, she pulled that out of the fire.
She's got the will to win, man.
You can never count her out. And she said that at the end.
That was cool.
She's like, anyone who counted me out, like, you got the wrong person. I'm one of them.
Yeah,
I'm one
me
of
too.
Them. Katie, I'm sorry. I counted you out. I'm wrong. I'll never do it again. Never happen again. I'm sorry. But I'm very happy that you won, because that was so
badass.
Much fun.
That was a great fight. Badass. It was a great fight. It was a close fight. I thought it was a 5-5, 6-4 type of fight. Atmosphere electric, and yeah, she did chase glory, but she also has the benefit of fighting in front of her hometown crowd again. It just financially just made more sense to have the fight in Ireland. Cameron doesn't have a lot of fans, so she gets that going for her. Now we can talk about the hometown cooking, and it did not really affect the fight. It didn't affect the outcome of the fight. The referee, putrid job. I don't even know his name. Putrid job he did. That was a knockdown in the first or second round, whenever it happened. That was a knockdown. There was no entanglement of the feet. She got hit with – Katie Taylor got hit with a jab and went down. Knockdown. Number two, the referee was allowing Taylor to hold the entire fight, not even close to a warning. If anything, he was looking at Cameron talking about what she was doing wrong, not Taylor holding every single time. Credit to Taylor. If the ref's going to allow you to hold all fight and it's only 2-minute rounds, throw your flashy combinations, land one out of every four, crowd goes nuts, hold, round over. You stole another round. That's pretty much what Katie Taylor did. She outlanded Cameron. She won the fight, but I thought that the cards were stacked against Chantel Cameron. Poor refereeing. One of the scorecards was 98-92, which is just to be expected at this point. But also, Chantel Cameron took the fight. She took the fight in Dublin because it made the most sense financially. So you had to deal with that. You had to get a knockout in that fight in order to win. The knockdown didn't affect the scorecards. It would have been a split decision. Katie Taylor still would have won. But it was very frustrating as just a fan and just watching and being like, oh, man, it's just boxing sometimes where everything's stacked against you. The referee was putrid. But Katie Taylor won, and she moves on to the next. I don't know who she should fight next, but, you know, she,
well, if Chantel Cameron did not have a rematch clause in that fight,
like a third one,
yeah, why would that? There should be no other discussion if you're Team Cameron. And honestly, I was going to say, like, all those things you were saying, I'm like, hey, you know who really wins? Cameron, because they're going to fight again. If they do, if they bypass Cameron and go to Serrano,
well, that's what I think they should do.
That's probably what's going to happen. But if Cameron and their team didn't work out a rematch clause for a triple for a third fight for a rubber match, that was the biggest mistake they made all night.
You granted, think that she would?
She didn't fight well.
No, she didn't fight well. She didn't use any of her physical advantages. She didn't jab, bro. She threw 28 or 29 jabs per round in the first fight, which is
how many jabs she threw the first round, though? She looked awesome in the first round.
Right, and then she deviated from it. She ended up throwing 12 jabs a round in the fight.
And just leading with her head, which is why she got cut up so much. The head clashes were nonstop. There was a lot of holding, like you said, a lot of just body on body, head to head. It got very ugly.
Broadcast was out of control, too. Good grind.
I mean, they were saying it was the best fight they've ever seen, which was
listen, you've called fights. I've called fights. This happens a lot. You become kind of like a prisoner to the arena. Like, you're in the arena. You hear the crowd. It affects you a little bit. You're emotional. And you think that you're witnessing something greater than it really is, than what people are watching at home. Not saying that was 100% the case here. It was an awesome atmosphere. It was definitely atmosphere of the year. It wasn't fight of the year. It was a good scrap. But the broadcast was so heavy to Taylor, it was absurd. Especially down the stretch, the last round, they were just gushing over her. I mean, she's awesome. Don't get me wrong, but it was a close fight. It was like a 6-4 fight. You know, a couple of rounds go the other way, and Cameron's getting her hand raised.
Yeah, I had a 6-4, maybe 7-3. But again, it was because Taylor was outfoxing certain rounds and pulling out. And that's another reason why I don't like 2-minute rounds. It's just so easy. You steal 30 seconds, and it's like, how do you not give it to that person? You know, like, right. if not a lot happened, a 3-minute round, it's a lot more. A 3-minute round is 50% longer than a 2-minute round. So it's like, there's so much more action that can happen. Like in that fight. Yeah. It's really difficult to score. And also there are only 10 rounds, a 12 round fight. Does Cameron win that fight?
Probably. 12 2-minute rounds. There's always a negotiation.
I don't think there should ever be a 20-minute world title fight. Male or female.
It should definitely be 20-minute fights for some women's fights out there, but not at this level. Like, I've talked about this numerous times. I called the first ever women's fight that was 12 3-minute rounds, Amanda Serrano. Like, we discussed it ad nauseum. Like, some of them warrant 12 threes. Some of them should be 12
Katie
twos.
Taylor and Cameron do. And even that's being said. I mean, yeah, I don't know. There's too much on the line. Now these women are getting paid real money. Now we're talking about legacy. Now we're talking about generational, prestige and also money. Like, 12 twos, 12 threes.
12 twos is a good it's a good middle ground. Right? It's a sport of compromise, a sport of negotiation.
Split the baby.
Yeah, and Taylor says afterwards, I have no problem fighting Amanda Serrano 12 3-minute rounds. I want to see that actually happen because I don't think she'll do that. I do think that Katie Taylor, Amanda Serrano should be next. I think they were playing with fire, not making it immediately, given the financial success of that first fight. Mm-hmm. Put it at Croke Park, put it in Vegas, put it in MSG. It doesn't matter. Just do the fight because it's the highest money that each female or each woman can make. It's Serrano versus Taylor. I expect that to be next. I think the Cameron one will always be there. They can have that if it's Serrano fight falls through. But I think Amanda Serrano, Katie Taylor, Ireland in the summer, do it. Just do it and then count the money. Chris is in. You're in on that, right?
I'm in on that. But I don't know. I would be really upset if I was Team Cameron.
Be accepted for her to a certain degree. Like, she won the second fight, so she probably got a lot more money for the second fight. She conceded to do it in Dublin because that's going to make her more money on the gate. I would love to have known what the third fight is, if they have a third fight in there or if it's all slanted towards Katie Taylor. But I think Serrano's not getting younger. Katie Taylor is not getting younger.
But that's my point. That if Chantel has to wait or out, I mean, and be the third woman out, what are the chances that she gets either one of them afterwards? Very easy for. I almost thought Katie was going to retire last night.
I wouldn't be shocked. Yesterday.
If she went out there and she was like, hey, listen, I am undisputed in two divisions. I beat the person who beat me. I've beaten everyone I've ever been in the ring with. I'm done.
Yes, I would. That would be awesome. That would be like a fairy tale ending. I like for a lot of boxers to go out.
And
with
Cameron
that.
Would literally do a backflip and land on her back and scream, as deservedly.
Yeah, but then she'd be like, "All right, but also thank you for the windfall of cash that I made.
You're not thinking like a fighter. You're not thinking like a fighter.
But Taylor can either retire or she can do one more big fight, one more mega fight.
But that's my whole point. But Serrano really is left out. That's my whole point, though. I'm talking from Chantel Cameron, who is the undisputed champion. It was her. Those are her titles. And they were taken.
And close.
And if she does not get a chance, she won the first one. Those are her titles. She defended them. She won them. She gave the rematch. She gave her a chance. And then she loses. And for her to go off into the sunset at that point, I'm telling you, from a fighter perspective, from a champion perspective, that sucks.
It does. Life boxing ain't fair. Kate Taylor held the whole fight. And I lost money. Immediately, everyone on Twitter, I'm tweeting my face off last night during this fight. I'm like, that's a clear knockdown. I've never seen excessive holding like this. The referee was I didn't have to tell you this. The referee was smiling after the fight. Did you see that?
I did not know.
Okay, I posted it on Twitter. It blew up. I would say 80% of the people agreed that the referee shouldn't be smiling and chumming it up with the winner of the fight afterwards. They're supposed to be impartial. Yeah. They're supposed to be professionals. They're supposed to be like robots. Yes, they're supposed to be robots. You raise the hand, you get the hell out of there. Get out of the ring.
Why I've not seen smiling? I've not seen many referees smile in a ring, and they shouldn't.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you. Because there were a few people in there like smiling. Now of course he's smiling. He just watched an unbelievable fight. You're allowed to smile. He had the best view in the house.
Impartial. You have to be impartial.
Bullshit. You're not supposed to smile. You're not supposed to show any sort of bias towards a fighter. You let her hold the entire fight. You didn't call the knockdown. Then on top of it, you're grinning after the fight. It's just a bad optic. And that's it. That's all I'm going to say. I lost money. Big deal. Not the first bet I'm going to lose. Not the last bet I'm going to lose. But all the people on Twitter immediately like, Dan lost his bet. Well, it's pretty clear you lost your bet, Dan. Hey, Dan, maybe you should not gamble on fights because it's clouding your judgment. And I was like, shut up. I don't want to hear that right now. You're probably right, but I don't want to hear. That was a big, big parlay I had, even though Benavidez, he knocked out Boo Boo a lot earlier than I had. I had 10 through 12 Boo Boo and Cameron Moneyline, and it was plus.
A lot of money was lost last night. A lot of my friends all lost money, too.
Betting on Boo Boo?
Just in general, everything across the board. A lot of people lost money last night. I didn't bet on anything, but
Vegas won. That's as per usual. Vegas
always wins.
That's why those buildings are huge there, and that's why we love going there for big fights. Mm. All right, that's our show this week. Thank you everyone for tuning in. Chris, any final words?
No, solid weekend of boxing, solid day of boxing, and a solid year of boxing. What a year. And we still have good fights left this year. And we will be covering them. This is where you guys need to tune in. But yeah, man, it's fun spending Sunday nights talking about fights that just happened. We get all jazzed up, and I'm now my blood's boiling at 7 o'clock at night.
Yeah, what are we gonna do now? I don't know. Ryan Garcia fights this weekend. We'll have another type of episode at the end or later in the week, breaking down Ryan Garcia's fight against Oscar Duarte. And then looking forward to the following week. More fights. Jake Paul, Bam, the final Showtime telecast, all that and more. So keep your hands up at all times. Protect yourselves at all times. Stay out of those DMs unless you got a spicy parlay for me to win more money.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.